First up is Tico McNutt, founder of the Wild Dog Research Project in Botswana. He'll be joining us at the zoo on Wednesday, April 1st. Hi, Tico McNutt. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
Well, you're entirely welcome. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'll tell you what, we are all excited that you're coming to Cincinnati to speak in our Barrows Conservation Lecture Series. You've done great work a long time, and of course, we have a new African wild dog or painted dog exhibit, so the timing's perfect for us.
Oh, well, that's great to hear. I actually didn't realize that you'd acquired some wild dogs for your collection. That's great news.
Well, we have one pair, and naturally, we worked with the SSP, with the zoo business, so that they're recommended for breeding. So hopefully we'll have success with that as well. But they're a terrific animal for a zoo exhibit. Of course, they're active and sort of buoyant species. They don't just lay around like a cat all day. They like to get up and get going. And of course, you're most famous for your work with African predators, including African wild dogs. So tell us a bit about what you're up to now.
Yeah, well, you're speaking my language when you talk about comparing how exciting wild dogs are to watch compared to most of the cat. And you know what? That's really true in the field, in the bush where they live in their natural habitats as well. Wild dogs are one of the most spectacular species to actually spend time with in their world. So it's nice that it kind of translates across into the zoo world where people get a chance to see just how buoyant, as you say, and how lively spectacular species they are.
They're also really a beautiful animal. Not that other animals are not, but, you know, you hear most colorful of wild canids, but really a beauty with the their build, their hair, their ears. I mean, they're a terrific creature.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And in fact, it was really, as you might have encountered in some of my materials on the web, it wasn't really my intention to be in Botswana for 25 years when I went there. But having encountered wild dogs and just this realizing what a spectacular species they were and they are, I got hooked right away and ended up changing my plans and doing my PhD in Botswana to bring more attention to this endangered species. And really, it was this such a spectacular animal to spend time with. That's really what hooked me.
I've been fortunate just as a tourist to visit Botswana and see wild dogs, and it is remarkable to me that in some of the parks, like Chobe, you can see them at dawn pretty regularly, waking up as a group, playful, loud, fun. It's a crazy creature because, of course, there's a hard side, too, which is they are one tough predator.
They're a very capable predator, and but that's a great experience. You start to realize what a spectacular social system they have and how tolerant they are of people. That's not just because you're in a park or in a protected area. They just are this unusual species in that regard. I've seen wild dogs that may have never seen people before that are just incredibly forgiving of my presence and really don't seem to be very much put off by people. Of course, that's cost them. You know, that's largely why they've been successfully extirpated from most of their former range, and it's why they're endangered.
So tell us a bit about that, because I know it, much like the gray wolf throughout much of North America, heck, they used to live right here in Ohio where I'm sitting, they have really been knocked down hard with just a small comeback in the Northern Rockies here in the lower 48. But I know that same sort of fate has befallen African wild dogs.
Yeah, you've really hit the nail on the head. We face exactly the same issues with conflict between this very successful large carnivore and livestock farmers. And so cattle farmers, sheep and goat farmers, small stock farmers do experience losses to free-ranging carnivores and wild dogs among them. And so a lot of our work is really attempting to provide solutions to addressing that conflict so that people can live in greater coexistence with, not necessarily appreciating or valuing them, but at least understanding that they're endangered and that there are ways that they can mitigate the cost to themselves and their livestock by things like, you know, improving their husbandry and really understanding what predators' activity patterns are and that sort of stuff. So we work on various projects in Botswana to basically to address those sorts of issues of this endangered species.
So tell us a bit about why Botswana is one of the places that at least is well known that today, if I was to go right now with a group from the Cincinnati Zoo, we'd very likely get to see wild dogs. And while you might be able to in parts of, say, for instance, Tanzania, they seem to have a stronghold in Botswana.
Yeah, no, that's very true. There are two really large contiguous populations remaining for the species. One of those is in Tanzania that's associated with the Selous Game Reserve and the wildlife management areas that surround that. And that, we think, has a pretty good likelihood of being connected still with northern Mozambique, which makes that a very, very important part of the remaining population for the species. And the other, the second population is that which we're focused on in the kind of the core of which is the Okavango Delta in northern Botswana. And that population extends right throughout northern Botswana, both inside and outside of protected areas, into eastern Namibia, Caprivi Strip, northern Namibia, and into Zimbabwe and western Zimbabwe. And we're really trying to develop some sort of even greater landscape scale approaches to managing the species in the Kavango Zambezi Transfrontier Conservation Area, which includes parts of Angola and Zambia as well. Mm. So we estimate about 25% of the world's remaining wild dogs are associated with that core population in northern Botswana. And the reason, as you've asked, why is that? Reason really is kind of by default. Botswana has one of the lowest population densities in the world, probably second only to Mongolia, and with less than 2 million people in the country, and a large part of the country dominated by the Kalahari Desert, and then the Okavango Delta, where tsetse flies have remained fairly healthy. It's pretty much been kept free of people and livestock. And so the Okavango Delta in northern Botswana, the areas associated with that have been really, by default, remained pretty much fenceless and largely roadless wildlife habitats. So that's really why the core population in Botswana has remained.
Tell us a bit about what their earlier range looked like, say, 200 years ago.
Yeah, well, even more recent than that, probably just over 100 years ago, African wild dogs were distributed right across all of sub-Saharan Africa, with the probable exception of the deep Congo Basin. And that means right across from, you know, through the Sahel from West Africa, where most countries have no longer have wild dogs. Cameroon, I got a report recently that the dogs have not been seen in Cameroon in several years, and they pretty much decided there are no longer any dogs in Cameroon. But that range extended right across from West Africa through East Africa and all the way through sub-Saharan Africa to the south. And now, as I said, there are really only two significant large populations, and then a handful of probably what might amount to fairly important isolated smaller populations in other parts of southern Africa. We estimate the total is probably less than 6,000 African wild dogs remaining.
Hmm. Down from what do you think the peak was?
You know, there are people that kind of give a guess, but it's probably 100,000 dogs wouldn't be unlikely in, you know, 120 years ago.
Boy, that would have been a different wildlife dynamic, wouldn't it? So, all right, Tico, tell us this. Some of your work is with wild dogs, but a lot of your work ends up having to be with people, I'm sure, because the challenge must be, much like the wolves and American ranchers, I'm sure there is a, at best, dynamic tension between people who hold livestock and your work to help protect the predators that take them.
Absolutely. And the more, you know, the longer we're there, the more I find they're working more with trying to develop ways of dealing with the social issues of conservation. And I'll be talking about this in the Barrows lecture. Mm-hmm. You know, what are the challenges that we face, and how do we really do effective conservation in this environment? I'll give you an example. We, for example, have a project that's a pilot study to introduce a restructured compensation program that is trying to address a lot of the flaws, the failures of how compensation works and why it doesn't often work, and this is true around the world, not just in Botswana, by introducing an insurance program is basically equivalent to how you would insure your car or your home. Livestock are important assets to rural African farmers, and being able to basically empowering them to insure themselves against losses can go a long way toward changing the kind of perception that everything that bad happens to people of Botswana is the responsibility of the government. We've got a pilot study that's introduced an insurance, a livestock insurance program that we run straight out of our Botswana Predator Conservation Trust in Moon, with about a community of about 70 farmers that are just outside wildlife management areas where we focus our field studies. Another major challenge is where people are consuming the game, the predator, the prey population that large carnivores depend on for a healthy ecosystem. And they're doing so in a commercial, largely commercial ventures in which people are basically poaching bushmeat and then transporting into local markets and selling it. This pressure increases. It's having serious impacts on the ecosystem in general, the prey populations in particular. And of course, when prey populations are declining, then large predators are compromised and end up going further afield to feed themselves and not surprisingly start to overlap with livestock. So dealing with the illegal hunting is another project that we're working on. And the first step in that is really quantifying it so that we can table it in the places where people need to talk about it in policy setting and legislation.
Absolutely. And we look forward to hearing more about it when you're at the zoo soon. So Tico, thanks for taking some time with us. I'll look forward to seeing you at the zoo soon.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, and I'll look forward to it as well.
My guest has been Dr. Tico McNutt, director of the African Wild Dog Program in Botswana. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Thane Maynard.